You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, we'll learn about a program that brings together pregnant mothers in Racine in an effort to deliver healthier babies.
Right now, it's time for our weekly check-in on the latest in national politics. Just this morning, President Trump's controversial National Security Advisor Stephen Bannon was removed from his position on the National Security Council, and we'll talk about what that could signal.
Plus, we'll take a look at some high-profile political races in the country and how their outcomes could shape politics on Capitol Hill, and much more.
Lisa Hagen joins us now. She is a political reporter for The Hill, where she focuses on political campaigns. Lisa, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this news about Stephen Bannon. He has been Trump's chief strategist and also held a seat on the National Security Council as of this morning. He is out of that position, and some new figures who had previously been on are back, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. What can you tell us about this move?
Right. Well, Steve Bannon, he's White House chief strategist, so, you know, it was a big deal when news broke that he was going to be removed from the National Security Council. And it's a big development because Bannon's role on the NSC was criticized by many people on both sides of the aisle as, you know, Trump trying to politicize the council. So National Security Advisor McMaster, he made the decision, and it was approved by Trump. So this can kind of be seen as McMaster, you know, regaining some authority and trying to shift things from his predecessor, Michael Flynn, who was recently ousted from the National Security Advisor position.
Is this being seen as a kind of demotion for Stephen Bannon, or just that, as you said, McMaster is starting to shape his own position?
Right. Well, at least the White House is insisting that it's not a demotion for Bannon. He's a very trusted advisor of Trump. He came on to his campaign in the final months, and, you know, a lot of people credit him with Trump's victory, and also had an influential role in Breitbart News. So, you know, White House says this is not a demotion, but in the new capacity of the NSC, Bannon can still be invited to meetings. He still has his national security clearance, according to Bloomberg, he is going to continue to attend meetings, and apparently is going to be in one this afternoon. So White House is definitely trying to signal that that is not the case.
And Stephen Bannon, again, off the National Security Council, at least in that official capacity. As you said, he can be invited back. But can you tell us who, in turn, is stepping up and will be in regular rotation there?
Yeah, so McMaster definitely has more of a role there. They are also restoring the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also director of National Intelligence. So a lot of these people are going to be having roles on the principal committees and are going to be in regular attendance of in meetings. So that they will be kind of the big players. But it seems like, at least as of right now, Bannon will still have somewhat of a role and will kind of be looming over it. But it seems like he'll have a pretty hands-off role going forward.
How is this news being digested in Washington in terms of what the move could mean for national security policy going forward?
Right. So far, it seems like it's being applauded from both sides of the aisle. It seems like it's welcome news on Capitol Hill. John McCain, Republican senator, you know, had sent out a statement applauding the administration for doing that, as well as a few other Republican lawmakers. And of course, Democratic lawmakers are also excited to hear about the news, because it really was viewed by many as Trump trying to politicize everything. So by having Bannon taken out, people see this as the NSC being kind of restored to its normal order.
And were there some, to put it one way, ruffled feathers, you know, that some figures who had been on the Security Council, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was previously off? Are relationships like that perhaps going to be restored?
Yeah, it's still too early to tell. Everything kind of just, the shakeup has happened now, but it seems like they want to kind of give the control back to McMaster. You know, the whole reason why Bannon said that he was on this was to downsize the NSC from where Obama's administration had it. So he wanted to oversee what the ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was doing in seeing that downsize. But it seems like Bannon and Trump in the White House trust McMaster. So I'm sure with, you know, the coming changes, you know, a lot of the tensions might die down and things will kind of go back to its normal order.
Now, moving on to a different area, a lot of politics watchers have been keeping an eye on various races across the country as sort of a litmus test for Democrats engaging the measure of anti-Trump backlash. And one of these races is a House seat in Georgia. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Democrats are really excited about this race. They've all rallied around this young rising star. He's 30 years old. His name is John Ossoff. And based on how things have been going in the final weeks, I think Democrats really see victory in the realm of possibility. It's a House seat in Georgia. It is a typically conservative district, but President Trump did only win it by 1 point in the 2016 election. So Democrats see this as a viable option, and they're really hoping that on April 18th, when that's the primary, they're hoping Ossoff can get 50% of the vote, and that would be to avoid a runoff. So if come April 18th, no one gets that majority of the vote, the top two finishers will go off to a runoff in June. But Democrats are really betting big on this race.
And it sounds like it's kind of an unusual race. The field is especially crowded, apparently, with Republicans, and that could, it seems like, benefit Ossoff.
Yeah, exactly. It's 18 candidates. They're all able to run in the same primary, the jungle primary. But, yeah, there's 11 Republicans, so they're all trying to, you know, carve out some room in this really crowded race, especially because John Ossoff, the Democrat, is getting a lot of attention. So I think Republicans are worried that this many candidates dilutes the race, and that kind of props up Ossoff to get that 50%. But, again, it's a really tough feat. Getting 50% of the vote with 18 candidates is really tough. But having all these Republicans definitely makes it seem at least a little bit more realistic.
And if Ossoff wins, obviously not a foregone conclusion, but if he does win, what sorts of things might people read into that?
Well, at least, as you said, you know, Democrats are trying to use it as a litmus test. This is, you know, we're seeing some special elections, so this is the first real competitive race since, you know, Donald Trump took office. So they, you know, if Ossoff can win, especially outright in the April 18th primary, I think Democrats are going to look at that as an early indicator for what's to come in 2018 and what we can see, you know, happening around the country. So, you know, we're seeing Democrats everywhere kind of pile in resources and send staffers and volunteers down to Georgia. So, you know, if they can really mobilize voters to come out, especially in these low turnout special elections, I think they're going to point to that as reasons why they, you know, can win in 2018 and maybe put, you know, the House and, you know, a little bit more unrealistically, but the Senate into play.
And are Republicans also funneling resources into that particular race?
Yeah. So we're seeing, I mean, Republican candidates are ramping up and they're, you know, putting out a lot of TV ads. But one notable player is the Conservative Club for Growth. They're going in pretty big for one of the candidates, Bob Gray, and they're, instead of just focusing on Ossoff, which a lot of the Republicans have done, they're taking aim at Karen Handel, who's a former Georgia Secretary of State, and she's previously run for political office before, so they're trying to tie her, you know, label her as, you know, a longtime career politician. So definitely trying to have that little narrative, the outsider versus the insider candidate.
We're talking with Lisa Hagan right now, political reporter for The Hill with a focus on political campaigns as we do our weekly check-in on Washington. And there have been a couple of other races that are remarkable, I guess, in that they have some big names associated with the candidates. Bernie Sanders supporting a candidate in, help me out here, Virginia.
In Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Elizabeth Warren, a candidate in California. So what's happening with those races?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of these progressive icons, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, getting in early for these candidates. I mean, in 2016, these were two coveted endorsements, and they only did endorsements, you know, pretty infrequently. So the fact that, you know, Sanders is willing to go in big for Tom Perriello in the Democratic primary for the Virginia governor's race, that's a big deal. He's trying, you know, this race in Virginia, the Democrats are trying to, you know, be the more progressive candidate. So Perriello's tried to, you know, carve out his name and go down that lane. So he's a former congressman, and since he's jumped into the race, he's centered his campaign around anti-Trump rhetoric. So that kind of goes hand in hand with Bernie Sanders' approach. So we'll see, you know, how he continues to mold that message, especially tomorrow, because Sanders will be going out and campaigning with Perry Ilo on the campaign trail.
And shifting gears a little as we wrap up, President Trump has said throughout his campaign that he would not plan on taking a salary if he was elected. And this week he kept that promise. So tell us about where Donald Trump put part of his paycheck.
Yeah, so White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, he announced on Monday that Trump will donate his first 3 months of salary, so that's his first quarter salary, and donate the whole thing, which is about a little over $78,000. So he's giving that to the National Park Service, and you know, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke was also at the press briefing. So he said the money will go to improving the country's historic battlegrounds. So, I mean, it's a campaign promise and a promise he made after being elected, and he's following through. But he's definitely taking a little bit of heat from his critics, who are just chalking it up to and calling it a publicity stunt.
And today it sounds as though the amount of that check was sort of cast in contrast against the amount that could be cut from the Park Service. Has that been commented on much?
Yeah, so the group, the environmental group Sierra Club, the one that called it a publicity stunt, that they're saying that if, you know, making the argument, if Trump really wants to help out, preserve parks, you know, that the, you know, the budget proposals would just slash the budget of all these agencies, especially Interior Department being able to do that. So while, you know, the donation is probably a welcomed one, it really wouldn't balance out with the type of cuts he's proposing.
And based on what you've seen with the president donating his salary to various causes, is this something that will be something that we can expect to see regularly and be a bit of a media event as well, seeing, you know, the question, where will that paycheck go this time?
Yeah, I think so, especially as we see, you know, kind of chaotic times and controversies in the, you know, the Trump administration, you know, having Sean Spicer start the press conference with that salary and a chance for a photo op. I'm sure we'll see more of that. So, and in an earlier press briefing, Spicer had said that Trump would, you know, he originally said that Trump would donate his entire salary at the end of the year. So I'm sure we'll see, you know, more of where his salary, the rest of his salary for the year is going to go. And I'm sure there'll be scrutiny on President Trump, given the fact that, you know, there have been media reports that he was supposed to donate to something, and a lot of those charities hadn't seen anything. So I'm sure there will be reporters following up on that pretty closely.
Lisa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Lisa Hagan, political reporter for The Hill, and she joined us to give us the latest in national politics.
Coming up after the news, Wisconsin has one of the worst infant mortality rates in the nation. We'll learn about a Racine program that's bringing pregnant mothers together to support each other to get healthier outcomes for infants. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time.